Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In my estimation, there is no man who brings with more regularity, with greater panache, more intelligence to bear on the challenges that we're facing internationally and here at home, especially in that nexus of the law and national security, than our guest, Andy McCarthy. I call it the high point of our week when we get a chance to talk with him, but that's especially so today because I want to draw upon his expertise as a former federal prosecutor, a best-selling author many times over, an internationally recognized pundit, to help us parse some very interesting and somewhat personal, I must say, issues that have arisen just in the past few days. Andy McCarthy, as always, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you for your time, my friend.
Frank, pleasure to be here.
Well, I want to start with the contretemps, shall we say, that Donald Trump instigated with remarks that he made yesterday, citing, among other things, poll data from some research that we had done, some opinion research that, in fact, a woman I consider to be the best pollster in America, Kellyanne Conway's, the polling company, did for us, of American Muslims earlier this year. Give us your flavor of what Trump was getting at with his argument about suspending Muslim immigration and whether there's any merit to that proposition, as you see it.
Well, I think, Frank, that Trump has demonstrated a propensity throughout the campaign so far to, some might say, move us into, others might think of it as bloviating us into important issues, particularly in the immigration area, that we need as a matter of policy to consider carefully. And, you know, I don't know how much he actually knows about Islam. I don't know how much he actually knows about immigration law, but he has certainly pushed us into what I think is sort of the central question. I shouldn't say sort of. It is the central question that everything else flows from, which is Islam, strictly speaking, a religion as we understand religion in the West? The reason that that's important is that we have obvious legal restrictions on using religion as a litmus test for a variety of things, not least immigration. By the way, those restrictions are basically statutory. They're not necessarily constitutional. That's a whole other discussion. But, you know, I think the easiest way to boil this down for people is to convey that if Islam is a religion, then you should not and ought not and cannot, under our law, be talking about a ban on Muslim immigration. On the other hand, if, as I believe, Islam has ambitions to be more than a religion, that is to say that it is a ideological sweeping system that doesn't recognize a division between spiritual life on the one hand and political and civic life on the other, and that it is an ideological system that has tenets that are counter-constitutional, then I think there's no question that we should, in our law, be able to enact standards that enable us to sort out who the moderate, truly moderate, which is to say pro-Western, pro-constitutional Muslims are, from those who are adherent to the Sharia supremacist program of imposing Islamic law on the West. That's something that we ought to be able to do constitutionally. It's something we ought to be able to do for national security purposes. Now, I don't understand. I don't know whether Trump is up on these nuances or not, but certainly he has provoked a discussion where we have to start to consider them.
Andy, you've written brilliantly about all of these issues, both in your columns at National Review Online and PJ Media, and in your several books on the subject, notably Willful Blindness and the Grand Jihad. You also contributed mightily to another book that we published at the Center for Security Policy, our Team B2 book, Sharia, the Threat to America. And I just want to drill down on this point that you've just made characteristically eloquently. There is a kind of fault line, really, that isn't that hard to discern if you know what to look for and you have a willingness to look for it, between Muslims who are clearly committed to a political agenda that is anti-constitutional and ultimately inherently seditious, and they call it Sharia, and Muslims who do not practice their faith in accordance with Sharia. And I guess what I'm interested in your sense of, Andy, is this really open to dispute based on the available evidence, or is that pretty much a, well, what a prosecutor might call a slam dunk case?
Well, it's one of those weird slam dunk cases, Frank, that the facts are exactly as you laid out, but that the law is what gets complicated, because the law has never tried to grapple with this before. The only way I could analogize it is, let's put Islam aside for a second and consider communism. If Karl Marx and his successors had been deft enough to sprinkle their sweeping anti-constitutional ideological program with a couple of religious tenets, would anyone have said, gee, that means communism's a religion and we can't vet open communists for fidelity to our constitutional system? We have to let them all in without inquiring into that. I think that most people would think that that was preposterous. Yet, that's exactly what we're talking about with respect to Islam. Islam is not a religion as we are familiar with religion in the West, and as the framers were conceiving religion when they put religious freedom in the Constitution. Islam is a full-service, totalitarian, ideological program with its own legal system that controls all areas of life from, you know, great economic, political, and military affairs down to social relations and even matters of hygiene.
Now, Andy, excuse me just a second. Let me interrupt you. Is that beyond dispute? I'm just trying to get ground truth here. What you've just said is widely described as some sort of hateful or at least offensive depiction of this faith that has no bearing on reality. But what's the reality?
You know, the only people who say that, Frank, are demagogues and people who are pursuing a program of, you know, that they think it's convenient to close their eyes to what the truth is. So, you know, no Muslim who's an honest Muslim, whether he's an Islamist or a Muslim who does not seek to impose Sharia, would deny that what I've just said is true. In fact, you know, if you look at the major juridical schools of Islam, and there are four of them that are authoritative, I think our friend Steve Coughlin, who's gone through this as carefully as anyone, says that, you know, they're in unison with respect to 75% of Muslim legal matters, and these touch on all these different aspects of life. That shouldn't even be, I mean, a person who denies that that's like denying the sun came up this morning.
You know, Andy, you've just described a phenomenon that may be demagoguery, or it may be taqiyya, being the sort of lying for the faith perpetrated by many Muslims, I'm sorry to say, not so much the ones who eschew Sharia, but the ones who do, for sure. but it also is much in evidence in our government these days. And we have to pause for just a moment, but I'm delighted to say you've been kind enough to give us an extra segment today to talk about what you call fantasy Islam. I think that's a marvelous turn of phrase for a government that has somehow come up with an Islam of its very own. We'll discuss that and much more with the great Andy McCarthy right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.